hot.
As a small child, I reached up to touch the stove, to play with fire, then pulled back in a flash and spoke my first word, hot. I always liked this detail about myself, that I neither cried in pain nor called for Mama or Dada. I always thought it said something about me, that I was willing to venture out and take the risk and report clearly on what I had learned. That's a perspective I like to think is true.
Cindy, Cindy, Cindy Lou.
Cindy, Cindy, Cindy Lou.
Love my rifle more than you.
I love my rifle more than you.
Used to be my beauty queen.
Used to be my beauty queen.
Now I love my M16.
Now I love my M16.
Hot. Saturday, March 22nd, 2003. I entered Iraq for the first time. I'm 26 years old, military intelligence, trained as an Arabic linguist. Our convoy stretched endlessly across the desert, averaging between 15 and 25 kilometers an hour, like the most intense traffic jam in the world. It went slow and hot and mind-numbingly dull. Drive and drive and drive. My weapon loaded. My mandatory protection gear was on, but there was no resistance. Nothing at all. We saw burned-out vehicles on the side of the road, damaged buildings, but weren't even sure if these were from this war or the first Gulf War. My team was lucky. Our ground assault convoy was with 101 Aviation, which meant pilots were in charge. Pilots were more laid back than other commanders, so a couple of times we were able to stop for a few hours. Drivers were allowed to sleep. The pilots gave us extra batteries and tea ration waffles, a welcome break from MREs, our meals ready to eat. And then there was our own team leader, Staff Sergeant Moss.
I broke the card in the computer.
Yes, Sergeant. With respect, Sergeant, why did you touch the card?
But you can touch it.
Yes, but we were instructed not to touch it.
Yes, but you can touch it.
And so on. Like death, like taxes, military incompetence is something you can bet on. But that wasn't the end of Staff Sergeant Moss's unpredictability. She drove the Humvee erratically, pressing too close or staying too far behind from the vehicles in front. We could barely stand to watch. Of the four of us, she wouldn't let Lauren drive since she didn't have a military driver's license. And we agreed that Quinn shouldn't drive because he didn't have the plastic adapter to hold his special glasses inside his gas mask. So I drove almost the entire way across Iraq, while Quinn sat beside me working the radio and SSG Moss in the rear running ops.
The vehicle in front of us, they've got a satellite phone. Sergeant? We could call in.
I don't know. Do you think when we stop I could go for a run? I love to run.
Like death, like taxes.
Which one of these MRE meals has the cookie?
Food. We all spent a lot of time in Iraq thinking about food. It's tough to be a vegetarian if you're living on MREs. True, there are 24 varieties, but most of them are entrees, like meatloaf, country captain chicken, hearty stew with beef. You get the picture. Only one out of six MREs were vegetarian, and I was one of four people on our team, so even if I got every single vegetarian MRE, it would still not be enough for me. I was determined to maintain my vegetarianism. That meant it was time to trade. Doing a drug deal, we called it.
Williams, I heard you got queso.
Yeah, we've got queso. Have you got shortbread?
No chance. We'll give you case B, but we're keeping the cookies.
Fine. We'll take your case B's and hang on to our M&M's.
You got M&M's? What do you want for them?
We want case B, the cookies, and whatever batteries you got lying around.
Tell your mind I'm stuck on this lovely girl. Course to me, she mean all the world.
As a woman in the military, I'm part of 15% still trying to get past an old joke.
What's the difference between a slut and a bitch?
Excuse me?
Gotta be one, y'all in the military.
Sluts?
Sleep with everyone.
Right. And bitches?
Sleep with everyone but him.
So, if she's nice or friendly, outgoing or chatty...
Slut.
If she's distant or reserved or professional...
Bitch.
Those are the choices you get. You'd think that being the subject of this joke might inspire some solidarity between female soldiers. That's not always the case. Things change after our first direct encounter with small arms fire. We're located with an artillery unit, just getting settled, and when we first hear it, I don't register immediately what it means. My first thought is, that sounds like the firing range. Then it clicks in my mind. They sound like gunshots because they are gunshots. The guys in the artillery unit take cover behind their vehicles. We're slower to react, but SSG Moss, Lauren, Quinn, and I take cover in the dirt behind the vehicle on the side opposite the small arms fire. As I get my bearings, I realize the danger is pretty far off. We can't see who is firing and are behind a lot of our own guys, so we wouldn't dream of shooting back. It's best to wait.
Get up, Specialist Williams. What? Get in the truck and run ups.
I look at Lauren, and she meets my eyes. In an instant, I see that Lauren is getting it at last. What is wrong with this woman?
Get up and go pull ops, Williams.
I watch the combat arms guys, figuring I'll get up when they do. They're better trained at this than we are.
Get in the truck, Williams.
I'm pretending I can't hear SSG Moss, and I look away from where she's sitting in the dirt opposite.
Oh.
Staff Sergeant Moss realizes belatedly that the bad guys have been shooting at us, and our best strategy is to take cover. Like death, like taxes. I try to read her face, but there's a blankness. What is she experiencing at this moment? Is she afraid? Does she know that asking a soldier under her command to get up and move around while we are under attack is stupid? Is she trying to get me killed? For what seems like the 100th time since we've been in country, I ask myself, how do people like SSG Moss survive in the world? Or, put it another way, how am I going to survive working for this woman? The situation festered. We don't speak for days, except when absolutely required. And when we did speak, I showed her that I would respect her rank, but that was all.
At ease, soldier.
Sergeant, I believe it is more appropriate for me to maintain military bearing with you at all times.
Specialist Williams, we can't keep doing this.
What are you talking about, Sergeant?
You don't communicate with me. You lock up every time I approach you. I need this to stop.
Yes, Sergeant.
Eyes straight ahead, my posture stiff and proper.
At ease, Specialist Williams.
But I am not moving.
At ease, Specialist Williams.
Is it happening? Is that what I think it is?
Williams, please.
I don't say a word. Not a word. She stands there for a moment, a single tear running down her cheek. Then she turns and goes. I should feel guilty, but I don't. You never cry in front of a subordinate, especially if you're a woman. The guys already think we can't handle this. I am asked whether I would be willing to go out on missions with the infantry. We've all heard stories of Saddam and his army stashing weapons in schools and mosques, places we wouldn't attack without provocation, so we know that even these places must be searched. This is my first chance to see how the infantry works. We clear a monastery. I know, on some level, that Iraq has a small Christian minority, but finding this monastery astounds me. We are in an area of Baghdad called Dura, a neighborhood Katoliki. The grounds of the monastery are lush, well-tended and groomed. The building is beautiful and clean to a degree that is surprising. Amazingly, the UN embargo and the ravages of two wars have somehow spared it. We knock, and a man in robes ushers us inside. In Arabic, I repeat my by-now standard questions.
We have nothing to hide.
You speak English?
Yes, I am happy to show you our church. However, the man with the keys to some of the rooms is leading prayers. Perhaps you can search those when prayers are done.
Specialist Williams, what's this man saying?
He's speaking English, sir. You can ask him anything you want.
Is it possible the lieutenant cannot understand the monk simply because he looks foreign?
Ask your commander if he would like to join us. Are any of these soldiers Catholics? Would any of the soldiers like to come and join us in Easter prayers?
Can we, sir?
No. Tell them we plan to begin searching the building. Now.
We could offer you tea while we wait for the services to end.
I'm sorry. We can't wait. We need to search the building now.
The monk nods, but I can see he is not pleased. We start down a hall, and the lieutenant impatiently jiggles each locked doorknob.
Ask him where these stairs lead.
To the basement. A storage space.
It appears to me, though I cannot be sure, that the monk has chosen to enunciate his English more slowly, as if he is speaking to a child.
What did this man just say?
Like death, like taxes. A few of the soldiers standing around us are starting to smile. After the basement, we search the kitchen and poke into a few of the rooms. Everywhere is, especially for our lieutenant, disappointingly empty.
Ask him again if they have any weapons.
I speak Arabic this time. Dejectedly, the monk acknowledges, also in Arabic.
They have an old Kalashnikov, 30 years old, and only 20 bullets.
It's time to finish this. Find that damn rifle.
Please, we need this rifle to defend ourselves. We have the only computer in the entire neighborhood, and the religious relics. Please, everything will be taken.
What's he planning to do with one AK? Shoot an armed mob?
Scare people away. Not shoot people, never.
Find that damn rifle and confiscate it!
Sir.
I know the LT's orders are to remove all weapons from mosques and schools and organizations, but orders can be interpreted. His orders at this point also stipulate that families can keep one weapon for self-protection, to protect themselves from looting. This lieutenant can make a personal judgment call on this. In the army, the right thing isn't always the right thing. So, during Holy Week, we cut mass short, we march into the room where the monks are praying, we order them to return to their rooms and open doors for us. In this way, we finish clearing the monastery. We find nothing else. As we pack to go, the monks gather at the front of the monastery. They see the lieutenant toss their AK in the back of the truck. He doesn't bother to glance back. Orders his men to climb in. It's over. We're out of there in a swirl of dust. I never see those monks or that monastery again. Maybe I told a captain I knew what happened at the monastery. How we had stripped these defenseless men of their one rifle. Given that we are currently at war, what would it mean to provide a weapon to Iraqis? In plain cold terms, it would be a serious breach of military protocol. There would be consequences. I don't say this happened, but it might have. The captain I told about this incident at the monastery headed out there later that day. He arrived at the monastery, climbed over the back fence, knocked on the door, probably interrupted their evening prayers. The same monk came to the door, thinking, now it begins. But also thinking, looters do not knock. So he opened the door, expecting the worst, but was then confounded. It was an American captain. Silently and without ceremony, the captain displayed an AK rifle. Hastily, the captain handed the AK to the monk, and he was gone again, even before the monk could thank the captain for this priceless gift. I'm not saying this happened. It would be a dramatic breach of military authority for anyone under these circumstances to return a rifle to the Iraqi people, but like with death, like with taxes, we need to find a way to live with ourselves.
Cindy, Cindy, Cindy Lou.
Cindy, Cindy, Cindy Lou.
Love my rifle more than you.
Love my rifle more than you.